Ah, yes. You all should know what that song means. I am riding this train solo today. Figured I'd take the ultimate challenge. Many say that doing a podcast on your own could be a very difficult thing. And since I have an hour to fill, I figure it'd be a worthy of a challenge. It's a very difficult thing, I gotta say to everybody. I mean, what can I possibly talk about for that whole hour? Usually, you know, I have other people to chime in. Al is always here to derail me and talk about Bill Paxton and Aliens and Mad Max and other movies. And then Mike is always here to kind of, you know, bring us back to the topic or whatever. But anyway, enough of me. Let's talk about, well, here's more of me. Thank you, everybody, for joining me today. Us, Criminal Masterminds, America Out Loud Talk Radio Network and Podcast Network. I am your humble host, per use, Richard Tracy, and I thank you again for giving me the time of day to listen to me. And just recently was looking over BlueLivesMatter.blue, and they had breaking news a couple days ago of two Detroit police officers getting shot. Where else? Well, in Detroit. Not Chicago, for once. In Detroit. And the article followed up on it by Officer Blue on yesterday, where they developed a suspect. And in Detroit, Michigan, two Detroit police officers shot on Wednesday night were investigating the murder of Officer Colin Rose. This was the shooting from not too long ago, where Colin Rose was shot and killed. I think he was investigating a larceny from autos. The two officers from the 3rd Precinct Special Operations stopped Raymond Durham, who was on foot in southwest Detroit. At around 8:30 p.m., officers took Durham's identification. Then he pulled out a gun and shot both officers. After the shooting, Durham fled the area and initially escaped, but he was located and taken into custody around 11 p.m. Both police officers are in critical condition. The early articles, the stories read that their conditions were unknown. Unfortunately, they are in critical condition. One officer was shot twice in the chest. I hope he was wearing a bulletproof vest. And once in the ankle. And the second officer was shot in the neck. Yeah, I don't think they have bulletproof neck remedies of any kind. Yeah, so that might... Even if there were neck protecting wear clothing of some sort of... Or some sort of thing you can put on your neck to protect your neck area. Can you imagine how much pain that would be? That would be enough to stun you and take you out of the game for a few seconds. And that would be enough to distract you. Just a tremendous amount of pain. Neck is a very vulnerable area to begin with. Doesn't have, you know, at least the chest area has, you know, the rib cage, the, what do they call that bone right in the center of your chest? Whichever. See, I'm not very good at this stuff. But you know what I'm talking about. The neck, very, very unprotected. And the back, too. The back as well. The spine can take some beating. Your back can take some beating. But that spine, man, has so much stuff running through it. It's like a main highway. All your nerves and everything. Sensors. It's like the gateway and the highway to your brain. A very difficult situation. According to the Click on Detroit, at the press conference on Wednesday night, Detroit Police Chief James Craig told reporters that the officers had been assigned to patrol the area of Ash and Tillman Streets to hunt down Officer Collins Rose's killer. Quote, part of it was connected to Officer Rose. They've been putting a lot of attention in the area and trying to identify the person responsible for Officer Rose, Chief Craig said. He continued by saying they were here doing that work. November 22nd, for those of you who don't remember, in 2016, at around 6:30 p.m., Wayne State University police officer Colin Rose, age 29, had stopped a suspicious man who was riding a blue mountain bike in Lincoln Street near Selden Street. Officer Rose had been investigating car break-ins in the area. After Officer Rose stopped the man, he suddenly pulled out a gun and shot Officer Rose in the head. Mortally wounding him, he died the next day. The suspect has never been identified or caught. So this whole time, since November, all this work and effort finally got him down to this darn jackass. What a piece of you-know-what he is. If indeed he is connected to that shooting. He is obviously a POS because he shot these two officers. A firearm was recovered from Raymond Durham, and investigators are processing it to determine if they can link it to the murder of Officer Rose. Well, there is some hope, I suppose, that Officer Rose is gone. Can't bring him back. But some closure would be nice for his family and friends. Just, again, a prime example of the lack of decency, the lack of, I'd say the lack of humanity, but after all, these are humans committing these terrible acts of, not only committing some of the misdemeanor crimes, but when being confronted, they take the next step and they apply lethal force against the police officers. And my question is to any old timers out there, any law enforcement guys that have been on the job in the 80s, I guess obviously retired, but for those of you, I would like to ask, how was it back then? Randy Sutton, for example. That's just a question for him. He's an old-timer. He's been a cop in the late 80s, I think, 90s. Oh, geez. I don't know. I forgot. I think like the 80s, yeah. And my question to him or anybody like him, what was it like when the bad guys said, you know what, I think I'm going to challenge this cop. I think I'm going to fight him. Or I think I'm going to try to get out of this mess. And what kind of force did they apply back then? I'm sure, of course, there were cop killers back then, but seems like I'm hearing more and more cases where when it's time to challenge the police, the bad guy or the bad girl, challenge the police in a lethal manner. It's no longer I'm going to resist arrest. It's no longer I'm going to just punch this officer in the face, sucker punch him, and book it. It's now I'm going to pull out a gun and try to shoot him. I'm going to pull out a knife and try to stab him. What's happening? Is there more of that? I hope Randy's listening to this and he can maybe chime in. Maybe we can have him as a guest sometime. That would be cool. You know, a real cop that's been there, done that, and retired and can actually tell us how to do the job properly. And that's another thing. I don't even know if you could do the job properly anymore these days. The climate has changed completely. You know, the firm policing, the good old policing. And I'm not talking about the policing where you just, listen. The basic concept of policing, the whole purpose of policing is good. So don't start when you hear me say this, the good old policing. Back in the day, we had good police officers too. Some people say today's police officers are paying for the bad policing that was done in the past. I don't know. Was that the case in the past? Were there no good officers in the past as well? That's my question to some of these brass supervisors, politicians. They say our police officers of today are paying for the price for the acts and the things that the police officers did back in the day. BS. Stop with that garbage. As far as I'm concerned, there had to have been good police officers back then. Otherwise, the generations prior after them and the generations after that wouldn't want to join the police departments in the first place. With the whole purpose of going up there and saying, I want to help the community. I want to go out there and I want to do something good for the people in my community. I want to contribute in some way to society. That's that the whole purpose has always been there. So I refuse to believe that the police were so brutal and racist and bad back in the day. Yeah, I understand there are plenty of cases back in the day where the police didn't do overly proper things, you know. But things have changed. So back in the day, yeah, I would like to know back in the day how policing was versus how it is now. And especially from the standpoint of when the bad guy decides to challenge the police officer. Sorry to go off of on my rant there for a moment, but I did occupy like, what, 5 minutes with that rant? Cowgirl followed up the story of Colin Rose's murder today with an article story titled DNA Match Found Between Detroit Police Officers Shooting and Sergeant Colin Rose Murder. Dun, 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 dun. And it continues to unfold. The onion continues to unpeel. Detroit, Michigan again. A DNA match has been confirmed between the handgun used in the shooting of the two Detroit police officers on Wednesday night and the November murder of Wayne State University Sergeant Colin Rose, according to Fox 2 Detroit. Well, this Durham guy's a complete freaking idiot. If you're going to use a murder weapon, if you're going to kill somebody, wouldn't you just try to dispose of that weapon? Does Detroit have, you know, major bodies of water near it? I don't know. I need to look at the map. It's Michigan. Is it anywhere near the lakes? I don't know. I think so. Yeah, toss it in the water. It'll sink to the bottom. Hey, let it swim with the fishes. A 38 revolver. A revolver, too. Whoa. Raymond Durham is an old-timer. Who uses a revolver anymore? A 38. The firearm used in Wednesday night's shooting is also the same type of firearm that was used to shoot and kill Sergeant Rose. The gun, a 38 revolver, was recovered from a suspect, Raymond Durham, after he shot officers in the area of Ash and Tillman on Detroit's west side. A Detroit police source told local media on Thursday night that investigators collected DNA from Durham's revolver that matches with the scene of the killing of Wayne State University Police Sergeant Colin Rose. Oh, there was no pending time for that DNA test. You know how usually you submit evidence and it's like, you have about 30 to 60 days to 90 days to see if the DNA comes back. Certainly, some priority takes. Some cases have higher priority over others, but just a prime example right there. How backed up, the forensic labs are sometimes. Our police sources in the area are unable to confirm this information. For what I just read? See what happens when you read the article. See what happens when you read an article and you didn't read it before? You run over and stumble a little. Here, Durham, age 59 here, was arrested a couple hours after... Well, he's age 59 here. Anyway, 60, 59. Close enough. Old fart. Sorry to anybody who's in that age bracket, but yeah. Yeah, I'd consider you old. I'm halfway there. Don't feel bad. I'm not young anymore, that's for sure. I got gray hair. Does that count? Yeah. No young men have gray hair, all right? Stop it. Anyway, Durham, age 59, was arrested a couple of hours after Wednesday's shooting, and he was also wounded. Good job by whoever caught him so soon after. He has not confessed to anything despite previous media reports. Expected. I mean, why would he? These days, people don't have honor anymore. I mean, why would anybody admit? Especially if a lawyer gets to you. Don't say anything. Detroit Police Chief James Craig said, quote, there are some similarities in the appearance and even in the matter of attack in the two incidents. And also that the suspect was very violent and clearly he was aggressively trying to kill our officers. Sergeant Rose was murdered while he was investigating a report of auto break-ins in the Woodbridge area on November 22, 2016. Sorry, I'm reading this again, but it's okay. He radioed to his dispatcher that he was about to speak to someone on a bike. The importance of calling out on your stops, ladies and gentlemen, to any police officers that are listening to me. Remember, don't try to be a hero. Get on the radio and call out with wherever you are, because you never know what could be your last transmission. It could be a clue. That was his last transmission. A bike and a flashlight were recovered from the scene. A rush for comparison of the bullets used in both incidences has been sent to the Michigan State Police Crime Lab. Sources told local media that Durham had been known to ride a bike like the one that was found at the scene of Sergeant Rose's murder. Wednesday's shooting at the two Detroit police officers was very close to where Sergeant Rose was killed. Officers who were shot then were part of a stepped-up police presence to try to find Sergeant Rose's killer. This entire time, they've been looking for this jackass. Amazing. And this entire time, if Durham turns out to be the guy, this jackass actually hung around. What an idiot. One day, police officers... One Detroit police officer was shot in the neck. We already know this. Chief James Craig said that the earlier diagnosis is that he's going to be okay. Good. Great. That's very good news. Second Detroit police officer was shot twice in the chest, which was stopped by body armor. There's my answer. He was wearing body armor. Thank God for Kevlar. Both officers are now in stable condition. Good. We send them our best.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Download our new apps and be part of the most informed audience in broadcast. Well, I'm not a vitamin kind of guy, but I also discovered playing hero with your health doesn't work either. I found myself in the hospital, you know, working long hours, had trouble sleeping, low energy even. Well, I knew something had to change. Well, then someone sent me a product called Healthy Cell Pro and told me to take it for 30 days. I figured, what do I got to lose? 3 weeks into a one-month supply, the results blew me away. More restful sleep, a sharper focus, even more energy. That's even for Malcolm Out Loud, that is. Nobel Prize nominee inventor Dr. Vincent Giampapa. He explains it this way. It works by infusing your cells with over 60 plant-derived phytonutrients that target the building block of your body, the cell. I liked it so much, I asked the company for a special deal for you. Instead of $110 plus shipping, you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan, plus free shipping. Just go to HealthyCell.com. Use the limited time offer code OUTLOUD.
Here's another story of, this will put you in a good mood. Baby rapist attacks baby girl at playground. Boy, that doesn't sound... I'm sorry, the title is Man Tries to Rape Baby Girl at Playground, Then Mama Bear Commences Massive Beatdown. This is a story by Officer Blue. Kansas City, Missouri. William Bates Jr., 24, and also, by the way, is the biggest POS you'll find out there. Well, among the biggest. Is in custody after he tried to rape a 2-year-old girl at the playground on Friday. According to KTLA, The two-year-old girl was playing on swings at the Kemp playground when Bates showed up and started, quote-unquote, eyeballing the children. The mother of the child, or the children, said that Bates then walked up, snatched up her daughter, grabbed her by the hips, and pulled down her diaper. Bates then lifted his shirt, dropped his pants, and started thrusting at the child. Oh my God, I don't know what I'd do. I mean, believe me, I'd do something. But, oh my God, the fury, the rage that would just boil in my veins if I was to see that. Any child seeing that. Anyway, the mother then went into mama bear mode and charged Bates. Yeah, she was pissed off. She's like, WTF are you doing? Knocking him to the ground. While Bates was on the ground, the mother began pummeling him with her fists until Bates was able to escape and run away. Well done, mama. Way to protect your little cubbies. The baby's mother then ran to the nearby homeless shelter and called the police. Okay. The officers responded to the and located Bates near the playground. Bates was placed under arrest, and he was found to be carrying a white vial of fluid with a chemical odor as well as marijuana. The homeless shelter. She ran to the nearest homeless shelter. I wonder if he was staying at the homeless shelter. That's my next question. Sometimes they put these homeless shelters wherever they please, and I'm talking about, like, primarily local governments. They just put them wherever. They don't tell the public where they go, that when they're going to open, what they are, when and where they're going to be, and they just open up. I'm speculating here, assuming that this jackass is from a homeless shelter. The photo here doesn't show that he doesn't really take care of himself, and he's actually pretty beat up. Oh, she did a number on his face. She did a little dance, a little river dance. But yeah, they put these shelters just about willy-nilly anywhere. And then during daytime, when the temperature is just a little bit above freezing, they go roaming around. They don't have work. Some of them don't even want to work. And they just go mope around. Go to the grocery stores, loiter around shopping centers, people's neighborhoods, kids' playgrounds. And then on occasion, you get a creep like this who wants to walk up and grab a two-year-old. Give me a break. Anyway, if I lived in that community, I would definitely be asking where this Bates fella came from. Anyway, once at the jail, Bates claimed that he just got a cigarette from somebody at the park and doesn't remember anything after that until he was getting arrested by the police. The dirtbag is being charged with first-degree attempted statutory sodomy with a person less than 12 years old. Bail is set to $150,000 in cash. Oh, yeah. Class A scumbag right there. Just complete disregard for any kind of decency. Any kind. There was a video that I was hoping to discuss with my fellas here, but unfortunately, they are not present. This video is of a retired deputy security guard who shot a bank robber. Article by Officer Blue here. In Rockford, Illinois, newly released video shows a security guard who is a retired deputy gunning down a bank robber just after the robber entered Alpine Bank. The initial incident occurred in January, but the video has just now been released. It was also announced that the guard would not face any charges for using deadly force to defend the lives of the people in the bank. I would hope so, because it's pretty clear in the video that if he wouldn't be there, boy, some bad stuff could have happened to those innocent people at the bank. WIFR reports that Winnebago County State's Attorney Joe Bruscato, Winnebago County. Who named that county Winnebago County? I'd like to do some research on that. How did that name come about? Winnebago County State's Attorney Joe Bruscato said, quote, "There's no doubt in my mind the actions of Brian Harris saved the lives of those that were employees in the Alpine Bank location in the on that date and saved his own life. I agree." The security footage shows the masked robber, Lawrence Turner, coming in, shooting once into the ceiling, then at retired Winnebago County Deputy Brian Harris. Boy, Harris reacted instantly, shooting the gunman, DRT. What's DRT mean? Harris reacted instantly. I'm not good with abbreviations. Sorry. They are taught generally to shoot center mass in the body. This is a quote. This is a very dynamic, fluid situation, and he's doing what he was trained for 30 years to do, and it was eliminated. To eliminate and take care of the threat. Rockford Police Chief Dan O'Shea said, an autopsy report shows that Lawrence Turner was high on drugs at the time of the shooting. Turner has also been linked to several other bank robberies. Well, guess what's going to happen now? There won't be any more bank robberies. Here, let me set it up for you, for those watching or looking at the video. The camera is set up in the corner of the entire room, and it's behind the teller line. And on the far side of that teller line, which doesn't have any kind of glass protection or anything, anybody can willy-nilly walk around the counters to the registers. And at the end of the counters, there's our retired deputy. And there's like two or three people standing behind the counter. And what they do is watch the person coming in through the front doors. And they clearly, before he could even walk, he walks through, well, he's in the vestibule. Once he's in the vestibule, the people are already ducking because they probably see he's wearing a mask and has a gun in his hand. So what does he do? The deputy, unfortunately, does not see the guy instantly. But once he clears the vestibule, the guy walks in, points the gun to the ceiling, and shoots it. Deputy's already got his gun, his hand on his gun. And right as he's pulling his gun out, the bad guy is going for the deputy, pointing the gun at him. But that deputy's draw is pretty quick. He pulls it quickly, fires one round at the guy. The guy returns fire. Deputy stumbles back. Then the guy fires some more out of panic. He's just blindly shooting. And then the deputy goes around the corner and dispatches the fella a few more times. The fella rolls around, gets back into the vestibule. He's like, oh, snap. This security guard's armed. So he stumbles through the vestibule and then just drops right at the front door. Well done, deputy. Well done. Just saved lives. Saved people. Saved his own life. I wonder after that, it's like, you know what? I got this gig so to be a chill gig. You know, you retire and you just want to enjoy retirement and get an easy job where you're just going to just hang out, do whatever, you know, watch the paint dry and watch the tellers do their thing. And then this Lawrence guy walks in. And what does he do? He reminds the guy probably that maybe I should have picked something completely opposite of what I wanted to do as far as retirement goes. Maybe go write a book. And after the shooting, quite frankly, I think he can. That's valuable information to be involved in a shooting. Just the situation of it. Just everything. How the environment is around you. Tunnel vision. The basic motor skills. How your hands feel. How does the gun feel in your hand? Squeezing the trigger. Is it difficult? Stress.
A very difficult situation. Very dangerous situation.
Well done. So, guy's dead. He won't be committing any more bank robberies. That's a good thing, right? I think so. Next story I wanted to look at was there's a really good video of an SUV plowing through the gas pumps. Stories by Officer Blue again. It's either Officer Blue or Cowgirl. Blue Lives Matter only have like two writers? Maybe I'm just not picking up the other stories. Seattle, Washington, a collision on Monday night left one vehicle split in half and the other vehicle in a ball of fire when it struck a gas pump. Here's a good song. This should be very appropriate. You broke my wheel, but what a thrill. Goodness and gracious, great ball of fire. Yeah, Jerry Lee Lewis, Great Balls of Fire. I heard he married his cousin. Yeah, a rideshare driver was speeding down the road in a Nissan Xterra when they clipped the side of a Honda Accord just before 8 p.m. The collision set the Honda into a tree, splitting the vehicle in half. Oof. And Nissan went off course straight through the gas pump at the high rate of speed. Surveillance footage captured the collision, which showed the vehicle plowing through. Yeah, the vehicle plowing through the gas pumps before disappearing in a ball of fire. The driver of the Honda was entrapped in the vehicle, and the firefighters worked to free the seriously injured 35-year-old occupant and transported them to the hospital. The Nissan driver was arrested for, you guessed it, DUI, and the officers obtained a warrant for a blood draw. The rideshare passenger was treated for minor injuries. That's good. Are you at all surprised that, oof. Yeah, I'm watching the video right now. And I'll set this one up for you. It shows two pumps, or two rows of pumps, four pumps in front of you. And just the vehicle come, just plowing through one of the pumps. Literally, it's literally just a giant ball of fire. You said it, Mr. Lewis. You were absolutely right. How did you know that? That's the only song I know by Jerry Lewis. Yeah. He's what's this one? Oh yeah, Rock Around the Clock. Bill Haley, everybody. It's 1956, Rock Around the Clock. When I was in middle school, I took a guitar class. And guess what song we learned to play? Rock Around the Clock. So we had the rhythm part, and then we had the lead part. And that was like one of the first songs I learned how to play on a guitar. It was fun. Then we had a... We played in front of the whole middle school, too. It was cool. I was a big Nirvana fan back then, so I wanted to, you know, get up and play Nirvana songs, but our teacher probably wouldn't allow that. And instead, we played Rock Around the Clock and a bunch of other songs. Good song. Great song. And there's an ad somewhere. Anyway... So there you have it, folks. There you have it. The great ball of fire just came plumbing right through that gas station. DUI is a scary thing, man. Once you get behind that wheel of the car under any kind of alcohol in you, you really got to be careful. Hey, kudos to you if you can get behind the wheel of the car and drive from point A to point B with no problems at all. But once you start hitting things and affecting other people and other things, property around you, it's a problem. It's an absolute problem to everybody, including yourself. So what's the best solution for that? Don't drink and drive, ladies and gentlemen. It's probably not good for you. There are a few other things I wanted to cover. There was I was working out at the gym the other day, and follow me here. This is kind of related to policing. And there's a TV in the locker room, and it blares ESPN. And there was an ad, a Liberty Mutual ad, which drove me insane. I couldn't believe it. Oh, I can believe it. But essentially, it just shows that with the passing generations, how softer and softer we are becoming with every passing generation. This particular ad talks about Liberty Mutual service that is rendered to their customers. Whenever they get a flat tire on the road, they can call and somebody will come out and change the tire for them. My question is, who doesn't know how to change tires these days? I mean, I'm not the most manly guy you'll meet. I'm not the most handy guy. You know, I don't even know how to, I can barely put a nail in the wall. I can kind of do that. I cut the grass around here, cut my own lawn. But if something serious happens in my house, I don't know how to do it. I got to call somebody. I got to get somebody to fix it. I don't know how to hunt. I don't know, go catch my own food. That's basically what I'm saying is I'm not the toughest guy. I'm not the manliest man you'll ever meet. But I do know how to change a tire. And I do know how to work jumper cables. So this particular ad... I'll set it up for you. It has a mom and the kid standing on the side of, you know, the Liberty Mutual background. The Lady Liberties, the Statue of Liberties in the back. They're by the Hudson River. And mom is standing next to her nerdy-looking kid with a nicely combed hair. He's wearing a T-shirt and tight jeans or slacks of some sort. He has his one hand down. And then the other hand is holding his right hand is holding his left elbow, basically. So it's like a submissive, I'm with mommy posture. And then his mom standing right there with her hands like, yo, I'm his mother. I'm his mother. And I'm here to change his tire. No, she's not there to change his tire. She's there to talk about Liberty Mutual and how they are going to change a tire for him. And the kid's grown. He's taller than her. He's a grown man. Change your own freaking tire. Anyway,
Liberty Mutual stood with me when this guy got a flat tire in the middle of the night.
And he's all like, oh, mom, come on. That's embarrassing.
Hold on, Dad.
And it immediately goes to two guys on the side of the road. One is scratching his head looking at the car. The other one is on the phone saying, hang on for a second.
Liberty did what?
Yeah. And so it's like basically a conversation between the two scenes. Yeah.
Liberty Mutual 24-hour roadside assistance helped him to fix his flat so he could get home safely.
My dad says our insurance doesn't have that.
So, and the other two guys are like this, kind of like a nerdy kid with a flannel, and then the other guys also, like, all their haircuts are about the same. They're all like skinny and wimpy looking, and then they're, you know, on the side of the road with a, it looks like a hatchback Ford Focus. They have all this equipment out, all this stuff out from the trunk. And they don't know what to do. They don't know how to. And it's in the middle of the night. They could be anywhere. And it could be dangerous. And you know what could solve this? If he knew how to change a tire. Which, from what I remember, everybody kind of knew what to do. My mom, I think, even knew how to change a freaking tire. My mom. And she's like a tiny little Russian lady. A Russian woman. We know how to change tire. We know how to change legs on horse if one leg goes flat. My mother does not talk like this.
Don't worry, I know what a lug wrench is, Dad.
Aww.
Is this a lug wrench?
Maybe.
You can leave worry behind when Liberty stands.
And the other guy sounded like Luke Perry. He actually sounded tough. My point is our society is getting softer and softer and softer. And I was talking, I kind of made a post online and said, you know, kind of, what's it called? Voicing my frustration about it. And some people laughed and said, you're right, and made jokes about it. And then one guy said, well, I have AAA, and I'm happy with their services, and they can come out and they help me out. So I said, hey, man, I'll teach you how to change a tire. Everybody should learn how to change a tire. But again, it kind of shows this whole, I don't know, it's like we're soft. We're a soft society. And then the same society that doesn't know how to change a tire, for example, also sits there and looks at these videos of police shootings. And when the police have to go out there and actually do police work, they're the voice. They're the voice of frustration that says, well, why did this happen? Why did this happen? Why couldn't they do this way? Why couldn't they use a taser? Why couldn't they shoot him in the arm? Why couldn't, you know, they don't understand that there are ugly aspects to policing. There are things where, like this Durham guy, you confront him and he doesn't want to go. What do you do? And he pulls out a gun and shoots you. What do you do? What do you call somebody, or you're the police? You have to take care of it. A big portion of the society sits there on their couch and plays. We always say it, Monday morning quarterback. And they apply their values and their ethics to the actions of the police officer who is in a very bad environment, possibly in a very bad neighborhood, possibly surrounded by very hostile individuals, aspects, etc. And on top of that, he or she has a split-second decision to make. Life or death in some instances. And the reason I'm connecting this is because the climate is the way it is. Because a lot of these softies have been voicing their opinion. Listen, you have every right to voice your opinion. It's very important that people have an opinion, but it's also important to counter that opinion and discuss it. And it just reminded me of that. So watching that commercial for some reason made me think of how vulnerable we are all becoming. Not me particularly. I mean, I know how to change a tire. And when I see something bad on TV or when I see something bad in this world, I feel like I can process it from a neutral aspect and say to myself, well, you know, you weigh the facts. You don't pick biases. You don't pick sides and just kind of push for one or the other. Like the video we saw of the guy who pulled out a wallet, came out of the car, and his posture, the idiot put his hands together and he postured his body in a way as if he was holding a gun. And it's unfortunate. Was he intending to do that? Probably not. You watch that video, you realize the poor guy was coming out of the car and the door was so heavy that he was trying to push the door out of the way and just he was using his elbow. And what, if he was using his elbow, he brought his other hand to join the other hand where he was holding his wallet. From the aspect of the officer, from his point of view, it looked like the guy was holding something black, a black object in his hands. And it did look like he was joining his hands together and he was pointing the wallet at the guy or whatever this black object was. And he got lit up. And the officer literally just pulled up to assist on a traffic stop. Traffic stop. So, and people will look at videos like this, and they will immediately jump to the side of the dumb dummy who got shot. You know, and is he dumb? No, I mean, in that particular instance, it was just a bad situation overall. You have to see it from the officer's perspective. You have to see it from the guy who's coming out of the car. That's all I'm saying. Instead of just jumping on these, Michael Brown was a perfect example. There was little information on the shooting involving Michael Brown and Darren Wilson. At the beginning, the media saw an opportunity to deliver this execution-style, cold-blooded murder story to the public, and it picked up. And then Dorian Johnson jumped in there and lied. And then the media was loving it. The media was like, Michael Brown was executed. He had his hands up. No, that wasn't the case at all. And that's, it's poison, essentially. You're poisoning a neutral mind. a mind that didn't really have an opinion on it or that wasn't overly passionate about it. And now all of a sudden, an entire nation full of bias rhetoric. Frightening. Speaking of Michael Brown, there's like a documentary that was put out. And they used the surveillance footage to claim that he was the guy at the store was dealing drugs. And real quick, just an article by Officer Blue he wrote in March 12th. Newly released surveillance video claims prove Michael Brown didn't rob store. He was just dealing drugs. And it's the same footage of him walking into that convenience store and taking the cigarillas or whatever the hell he was taking from the guy and then pushed the clerk over to the side. So now there's a documentary filmmaker named Jason Pollock released a film called Stranger Fruit at the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas. The goal of the film was to examine the shooting from the family's perspective rather than examining the facts. Okay, and then in the part of the video, Michael Brown's mother, Leslie McSpaden, explains that Michael Brown never committed a strong-armed robbery of the convenience store, and as investigators claimed, and instead he was just dealing drugs to employees. Security footage obtained by Pollock shows Michael Brown the store hours before he was killed. Pollock claimed that the video shows Brown giving a store clerk marijuana in exchange for two boxes of cigarillos. Okay. There was some type of exchange for one thing for another. Leslie McSpaden said Michael Brown left the store without the cigarillos in what the filmmaker claims was employees holding onto for Brown. Hang on a sec. However, New York Times reports that Jay Kanzler, the store's attorney, says the Pollock's narrative is all fabricated. Quote, there's no traction, Mr. Kanzler said. There was no understanding, no agreement. Those folks didn't sell him cigarillos for pot. The reason he gave it back is he was walking out of the door with unpaid merchandise and they wanted it back. Later that day, the store employees called the police after Michael Brown robbed them in several boxes of Swisher Sweets and assaulted an employee who tried to stop him. And you can see that footage. I wonder what footage she had of. Here it is. The Stranger Fruit.
Through the St. Louis County investigation papers, I stumbled along something that was absolutely stunning. At approximately 1:13.
This is only 2.5 minutes.
August 9th, a male arrived as a backseat passenger in a dark-colored passenger vehicle. Brown enters and exits the front doors. Michael was at the market at 1:13 a.m. the night before he died. Camera 7. The male proceeds to the beverage cooler, selected unknown items, and proceeded to the register. The male remains at the counter and eventually leaves the area of the registers with no merchandise.
Okay.
I couldn't believe what I had read.
Oh my gosh!
In the store the night before he died. At St. Louis County, saw the videotape, and they didn't tell us. Well, guess what?
Listen to his voice. He's not even sincere. Huh? What? He was at
St. Louis County. I've got the videotape.
I was surprised to hear that 2 years later, there was a video. What you're going to see on this video is what they didn't show us happened that clarifies that there was an understanding. And that's what you're going to see in that video.
In the early hours of August 9th, just 11 hours before Mike took his last steps, he went to his local convenience store to make an exchange. Look carefully at the counter, and you can see a trade is made. Mike gives the store a little bag of weed. You can see the employees smelling it and passing it around.
There was some type of exchange for one thing for another.
Mm-hmm.
That these people know each other well enough,
mm-hmm,
that this is the relationship that they have.
Uh-huh.
Then you can clearly see Mike being given two big boxes of cigarillos. The store clerk puts the cigarillos into a bag for Mike with his other stuff and hands it over the counter. Mike is about to leave the store, but decides to have the clerk hold his things behind the counter for him.
Okay, so Michael Brown was not as innocent as everybody made him out to be. He was a drug dealer, right? Okay, let's go on. I'm curious.
Next day, with his hands politely behind his back, Mike goes back into the store to get his stuff.
It was a misunderstanding.
St. Louis County has written documentation.
So let me get this straight. The main guy that runs the store was there the next day instead of the guy that was there the night before. Whatever deal that was made between Michael Brown and this guy behind the counter. And then the older guy was there probably, I don't know, is he the store? I think he's the store owner. And he was like, hey, sorry, I'm not... I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what drug deal you're talking about. I'm not giving you any of my merchandise. He probably wasn't even filled in.
...that we found, which shows they saw the 1:13 a.m. videotape, but they leave out what really happened that night in their report. Mike traded the store a little bag of weed and got two boxes of cigarillos in return. He left his items at the store, and he went back the next day to pick them up.
Uh-huh.
Mike did not rob the store.
He did. He did rob the store. And, it's hang on a sec. Stop it. This Paula guy's an idiot. Look, he's not an idiot. He's just just pouring fuel on the fire. Still doesn't change the fact that the guy that got pushed by Michael Brown called the police and said that the store was robbed. Still doesn't change the encounter in any way between Michael Brown and Darren Wilson. Doesn't change anything at all. Whether he was there to deal drugs or whatever, well, just shows again that Michael Brown wasn't as gentle of a giant as they're making him out to be. Just stop it, all right? Enough of this garbage. Just more, and CNN, I guess, ran the store or, like, actually gave some attention to this Pollock guy. And then there were some rioting going on, static going on in Ferguson. It's the media and these little softies who can't understand what really happened. They can't process the fact that there's an unarmed guy charging at the police officer and trying to get his gun and bringing the fight, a brutal fight, to a police officer who's just trying to stop somebody, a potential robbery suspect. They can't comprehend that. They still have to go some other... They're starting to sound like Jesse Ventura. Jesse Ventura. Jesse the Mind. Michael Brown wasn't there to rob a store. He was there to deal drugs, which indicates that he's a drug dealer and not a gentle giant. Although you can be gentle and be a drug dealer. Darren Wilson is a patsy. He's a Lee Harley Oswald. He had the magic round, the magic bullet. Michael Brown. Yeah, they all sound like silly conspiracy theorists. Just enough. Enough of this stuff. Wow, look, I've been rambling for some time now. I wanted to cover Chicago crime stats real quick, but I'm running out of time. Anyway, total homicides to date for March. 19. What's today? March 17th. And so they're two ahead. Chicago just maintaining that that good old, the numbers are just keep piling up. Keep going. I'm not rooting them on. I'm just saying that it keeps going. From March 12th to 18th, six homicides. 6 days, six homicides, six shot and killed, shot and wounded, 18, total shot, 24. Just keeps going. Year to date, total homicides, 123 homicides. Shot and wounded, 512. Total shots, 627. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us, the Criminal Masterminds on America Out Loud Talk Radio Network and Podcast Network. Come join us next week, please. Join us every week. Subscribe to our podcast. Just follow it religiously. And tell me how much you love me, because after all, I wouldn't be doing this podcast if I didn't love myself. I'd love the sound of my sexy voice. If you're working for the men and women of the blue and the red on the other side and fire and rescue as well, please be careful. Please be safe. We love you. Thank you for doing what you guys and girls do. Really, honestly, none of us would have the pleasure of being in our own homes safely and recording these silly podcasts if we didn't have you guys and girls out there protecting us day and night. So thank you, and take care. Be safe.